Good Friday. Today is September the 5th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to take some time as we look out in the backyard and garden and talk about bagworms. Now, this is a pest typically we talk about earlier in the summer, but they are now in a stage where they are making a significant transition period, and that changes our management options. We'll be back with the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning and take a look out in the backyard and garden, talking about trees and insects once again. This time bagworms, typically something we talk about earlier in the year, but now we're at the stage where that bagworm feeding has ended, and it's a transition, if you will, when it comes to management. The caterpillars, in a sense, of the bagworms have, quote-unquote, tied off their sacs and they're pupating all across the state. So now we have to look at different management options. On the upside, the pupation means the caterpillars are no longer feeding, so there's not going to be any more damage that's caused this season. On the downside, though, no insect application is going to work when it comes to being able to get to those worms that are actually in the bag. So don't be fooled. The management basically now centers on a more physical removal approach, whether you're picking them off by hands or otherwise. If we take a look back at the bagworm, both the male and female bagworm caterpillars spend their entire larval development inside these silk bags that they create. The bags have two openings at opposite ends, and the caterpillar uses the larger opening to poke their head out to feed. They avoid falling from the plant host by anchoring the bags with small bits of silk attached to wherever they're feeding at on that plant. The lower opening serves then to basically let the waste pass on through. Otherwise, the bags would become basically filled with excrement from their feeding activities. The male and female caterpillars take very different paths then as they develop. Adult female bagworms never develop into a moth-like insect. They actually remain inside that bag and develop into something that looks more like a worm than it does an actual moth. The males, on the other hand, go a different directions. Now, sticking with the females, mature female moths have no wings, no apparent mouth parts, no antennae, three pairs of very short yet dysfunctional legs. The abdomen terminates as an egg-laying ovipositor for depositing and packaging her eggs into a pupal case, which then really becomes the main function. Now, as that female matures, they emit a chemical attractant, a pheromone, if you will, that draws in the males, and mating occurs with the females remaining in those bags, and soon after the mating, they produce the overwintering eggs that are laid inside the mother's old bag. The females die once they produce their eggs, and each female can produce anywhere from 500 to 1,000 eggs. That's why populations can build and expand so rapidly. Now, as far as the males go, those bagworms develop into more of a moth that can fly, and they're capable flyers. Their pupae look much more like other moth pupae, but as they emerge from that more as moths, they have large antennae that are used to detect and track that pheromone, if you will, the perfume that's coming from the females, and once located, they will then mate with the females. Now, when it comes to management, as we said, at this point, it is too late for any chemicals to be effective, and so it's only the physical removal, whether you go through and pick those off by hands. Sometimes those silk really have them attached tightly to the branches, so you may actually need to take a small handheld pruners and sort of snip those off, but if you can, collect them all in a bucket or another container and then take them out and dispose of them properly. Oftentimes that is by basically squishing them on the sidewalk or even depositing them in a burn barrel or something else so that you destroy the insects that are within that bag, because that's where the eggs are laid and that's where those new ones will come out in the following year. And as we mentioned earlier, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 eggs possibly per one of those bags. So it's easiest now to just remove them so you don't have that many more to deal with next year. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at crop.com. coverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. Well, canning as a food preservation method has seen a resurgence in recent years, especially as gardening has picked up since the pandemic, and Extension has some expert advice. USDA's Rod Bain tells us more.
There has been a growing interest in recent years in food preservation methods. Beyond the refrigerator and freezer, that is.
Certainly you can dry food.
Creating delectables such as dried fruit snacks or beef jerky, according to North Dakota State University Extension's Julie Garden Robinson. But for today, the focus is on home canning, an art still practiced by some. But as a reminder,
anytime you're preserving food, put on your lab coat because you are a scientist. You can put on your artist beret if you want and be as creative as you want when you're cooking food. But when you are canning food, you indeed are a scientist and you need to follow the latest recommendations.
From both a food safety and taste perspective. So take a popular food item and popular food for canning item. Pickles.
You always want to use vinegar with a 5% acidity level, and it will say that right on the container of vinegar.
She says some less expensive vinegars list a 4% acidity content, and although still to be determined its food safe status as a canning ingredient at this point.
For the best safety, go ahead and use the 5% acidity level vinegar.
Some home canners preserve tomatoes, especially those grown in their gardens. A tip both associated with food safety and taste from Garden Robinson.
Because of their acidity, which can vary, you do need to add citric acid or bottled lemon juice or lime juice if you plan to put it in jars and store it on your shelf. We as collective consumers don't like as acidic of foods as maybe our predecessors did. Through plant breeding, tomatoes are a little sweeter perhaps than earlier varieties.
Jams and jellies remain a popular canning item. But canners, keep in mind,
we do recommend some time in a boiling water bath canner.
Then there's this important canning tip to remember.
People like to make recipes their own, fine for cooking, but when you are canning, you're a scientist, and there are some substitutions that are okay, but not a lot of substitutions.
An example comes from a product more canners are creating and preserving in recent years. Salsa.
If you like a hotter salsa, you can change the type of pepper, but you can't alter the other ingredients. You can't add extra peppers, but you could make it hotter by choosing more jalapeno instead of bell peppers.
Additional home canning tips, advice, and recipes are available through resources such as cooperative extension offices and websites. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.